And we're rocking. So here we are today in Masterful Evocateur Session 2. Let's see what it's got for us today. Here's what we're up to. Is there anyone on the call who can't see the slides?
Yeah, BJ, I can't. I'm in actually in another class. I don't have my computer.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. I'll look at them later.
Okay, yeah, because there'll be a PDF. Yeah, like the PDF that was there. And by the way, just so everybody knows, the PDF and the recording for this will be on the same page that you found the first one on. It's just that the links don't go live until I've recorded it, because there's nothing to link to. And then I put the PDF up at the same time. So that very first email, the one that says, this is where you get the recordings, that's the one. And if anyone doesn't have that or can't find it, send me an email, let me know, and I'll send that to you. So here we are. What we're going to be up to today is pulse check. Check in with you, see where you are. We always want to see where you are, because it's a way of just finding out what's moving. And by having the question of what's moving and where you are, you also then get to own what you have been contributing to with respect to shifts inside yourself. That's why it's part of why I asked the question. The other thing is that it allows us to get present right now. And so we're also going to be looking at the agilities in depth, the notion of frictors and subtracting the frictors, the techniques. We may get to a demo of two of the techniques. And then we're going to take a look at the inquiry of calling forth your own development from what it is that you in this moment, or actually at the moment when we ask for that, sense, feel, employ your natural knowing to identify rather than think from our logical linear brain about where it goes and says, okay, this should be the next step. Kind of like when on some coach training classes for the International Coach Federation, regardless of the school, people might be asked, what's your next developmental step? And they would go listening, or they would go powerful questions or something like that. And because it seemed logical that that was the one that they wanted to work on, that was the one they would be having in trouble in class with. When if they had tapped into themselves a little deeper, what they might have found was coaching presence was the ICF piece to work on. That would have been available for them. Here, it's going to be about the agilities. What is calling you? Almost like you're out there at the edge of a cliff and you hear a cliff, or you're out at the edge of a forest and you hear something enticing you forward, something calling you and saying, pay attention to this. So that's where we're going to be playing today. Pulse check. So what's been called forth since our last session, or what happened as a consequence of that evoking, and what are you now aware that needs to be evoked, called forth out of you in this moment in time, not in some other moment in time, not in the moment in time when you were in the class or after the class last week, in this moment in time. If you take a moment and simply tap in, what are you now aware needs to be evoked? So any one of those three questions as a prompt.
So I'll go first. This is BJ, and I did listen to the recording. So I've been with that question that you asked at the end of who are you really, and it's like, whatever I say doesn't seem to hold any truth. You know, it's like, well, yeah, I'm that in this moment. And so, you know, I'm still with that question, and I don't know if I will ever really have an answer to that, except that I'm, you know, I'm a part of this universe and unique and ever-changing. And what happened, so right after I listened to the recording, I took my cat for a walk. I take my cat for a walk on a leash out on the beach. And I found a juvenile eagle feather on the beach, which you're not supposed to have. I always see them as gifts from the universe when I find them. And it's like, wow, that's really interesting as I'm in this question of who am I that I find this eagle feather right here on the beach. And so there's something about being receptive to the gifts of the universe at unexpected moments and being really grateful for them. And I've done, so other people don't know me yet, I've been doing a little work with Michael too, and so I'm really in this place still of being connected to the universe in a way that I never have felt before. And that's where I am right now. It's still being in that place and really appreciating that being part of rather than separate from.
Cool. So what I hear you also identifying is that you're now having the experience of a background truth that has always been there, but you haven't been regularly experiencing. Meaning
right.
You've always been connected, and
yeah.
We don't necessarily always experience it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
See, somewhere people, and this is a language distinction, but it's very important for people that you work with, is the distinction between disconnected from versus disconnected from the experience of.
Right.
So one can't be disconnected from the universe because by the language alone, that would mean that one is outside the universe. Which I have a hard time with that one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like in a sense being disconnected from flow. Okay, the same kind of thing. People say, "Well, I'm disconnected from flow. I'm not in the flow." No, yes, you are, because the universe is constantly flowing. Electrons are moving. Things are moving forward. It's not like. So it is, it's constantly flowing, and as a part of the universe, which means you're, since you can't be outside the universe, you're a constant part of this, then as a part of the universe, you are flowing. You're in the flow of the universe, always. Now, there's a distinction between is one in the flow of the universe that one wants to be experiencing or not? That's a different question. Or even the question of what's the nature of the flow you're in. That's a different question. But can you be out of the flow if the universe's nature is flow? No, you can't. However, we can be disconnected or out of the experience of the flow.
Right.
And that's something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're disconnected from the experience of the flow, but we're not disconnected from flow. In the same way, we're not disconnected from the universe, we're disconnected from our experience of the universe. And what I hear you identifying is that you're more now in the experience of the universe.
Right. Yeah, that term experience of, you know, is really like, oh yeah, I get that. I get that, being in the experience of whatever it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like somebody being disconnected from their partner in a relationship. No, you're not. You're not in the experience of the nature of the relationship at that moment in time, but you're not really disconnected. That's part of the illusion of separateness. That's just that the relationship has taken a change, perhaps, or it has a different quality to it, but you're still in relationship. But it wasn't giving me the same kind of feel-good feelings or whatever it is that I used to define that I was connected with someone. No, I may now be connected to the, you know, like the ugly side of the relationship. I'm still connected. It's just the side of the relationship I'm not happy about. And so I make these language distinctions as part of us using the language to refine our experience of how it is that we are in relationship with anything. Are we disconnected from it, or are we disconnected from the experience of it?
Mm-hmm.
This is Lenana, Michael, and I will tell you that I have been sitting with that same question, and for me it has it brought up, like I had told you, with it being connected to your core and really, and I guess you're right, it's not about being disconnected, it's about being in tune with that connection. And
yes.
Really, for me, it has made me be more in tune with that and redefining what my definition or how I view authenticity of myself.
Yes. See, there is an authentic self.
Right.
So is one connected to one's experience of that authenticity, or is one disconnected from the experience of authenticity? But you can't be disconnected from yourself, because yourself is there all the time.
Right.
You may be disconnected from your experience of yourself. Huge distinction. Because each time we language things, it points us in a direction of where to address and put our attention. Ultimately, I then get to ask the question, well, if I'm disconnected from the experience of my authenticity, which A, has an assumption that there is an authenticity there in the first place, right? If I'm disconnected, then I can start to ask, what is the interference? What's subtracting my ability to be in the experience of it? And then you go, oh, wow, well, it's being hooked by this piece of baggage in my past. So now I know where to focus. Or it's being hooked by my survival need here. So now I'm sitting in the illusion of separateness, thinking I have to do everything to survive, and I'm disconnected from the experience of myself, so I'm going to show up with a false presentation just so I find some way to survive.
Yes.
Yeah. Very cool to have that recognition. So in that case, what are you now aware of that needs to be evoked?
That I need to really determine what those factors are that are sitting behind those hesitations that keep me from truly experiencing my connection with my core.
Yes. And the clarity of those, once you get those, will give you the action that will help you subtract it. It's almost like, in a funny way, when you think about it, here's an analogy that makes it simple. Okay? So if I go, you know, I'm going to touch my arm. Okay? Now, if I have a shirt on, there's something in between me and feeling my arm, really. Okay, I can't feel the skin of me. I'm feeling shirt. And now I might be feeling my arm underneath it, but that's not the direct contact with it. That's not the direct experience of the skin of my arm. It's the shirt in between it. So one might call that the interference. Now if I put a sweater over top of that, now I have the sweater and the shirt in between it, and we have a couple of layers. And on top of it, if I put a jacket on over top of the sweater, over top of the shirt, now I have more layers. And if I happen to be in, you know, Quebec City in the wintertime, I'm also putting a parka and who knows what else on over top of all of that. Which means I go to touch my arm. I'm actually not touching my arm. I'm touching my parka, that's touching my jacket, that's touching my sweater, that's touching my whatever, however many layers you have. It's not any different with our authenticity. There may be simply layers in between that need to be subtracted so that when we do get it, we go, ah, that's me. So is this kind of grokking for people out there? Am I just like, wow, those mushrooms really weren't just regular, were they?
No, it's working for me. I envisioned the onion and the layers of the onion as you were talking. I was also envisioning the parka and the layers of clothing underneath. So
okay, good.
I think there's also getting something. So I did, like a long time ago when I started coaching school, we did something called Vision and Purpose. So, like, who am I and what's my purpose? And it still rings very true. And it's like truer at a deeper level. Like, I get, like, the words are still there. It's like, oh, but it feels deeper. It feels even more true.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like, I think that's part of the layering for me. That's like, oh, I get it more. I get it more. It's still, I knew it then. I get it deeper.
Yes. Yeah, we can have cognitive recognition, but the feeling level, the sensing level, and then there's that whatever other, the more refined sense level of it.
Mm-hmm, like a soul sense level. And the other piece is just sort of humorous. I started writing, you know, for Masterful Rocketeur, but it's like too long, so I just put M-E, so it's like, it's interesting that we're talking about.
Notice
me,
that, did you?
It's like Masterful, the M-E of Masterful Rocketeur, so.
Was wondering when somebody was going to grab that one. Actually, you know, it's also embedded in the coupon code. M-E for less. Yeah. Cool. So, Margie or Molly?
Well, there's another side to it. I used to pretend I was the actress. You've heard of Sarah Bernhardt? I was Sarah
yes.
Hartburn. And I acted, so it's been a very long path and journey till I was able to feel it and experience it, because I played at it for so many years. I didn't want anyone to know. I hid my feelings, and I hid all those emotions and kept them internalized so that they couldn't come out if I wanted them to. And, you know, when I found that I didn't have to be that way, it was just like a flower that was, you know, closed, and then it just, I opened up, and I'll never close anymore. It doesn't matter, you know, if someone likes it or not or whatever. I am who I am.
Yes.
And this is who I am, and I will experience and feel and be authentic. There isn't any other choice for me.
And see, what you're identifying there is that you're identifying the flower not being able to be seen in its full beauty, with its full potential, with its full fragrance, with its full coloring, etc. Can't be seen that way. Which means no one can delight in it. No one can be surprised by it or just appreciative of it. They can't just, the opportunity for all of that is missed. This is part of that singularity conversation. When the flower isn't fully in bloom, yes, we can see the potential for it. But it's only when it's fully in bloom and owning itself, meaning showing itself to the world as it is, then you just go, oh, wow, look at that. And without it being in full bloom, it never has the potential to take your breath away. And that's the potential for each human being, is to take our breath away with their uniqueness, with the surprise of them. You go, wow, I haven't encountered anyone like you before. And you go, duh, there isn't one.
You never will.
Exactly. And you never will. Exactly. Very cool.
It's hard work to be an actress, you know, to pretend all the time. It's really difficult to be what you're not.
Yes, it is difficult. And energetically, you're right. It is hard work. It's very draining because you have to remember which roles you played with whom. Otherwise, you're going to be caught out, which means there's also a constant low level or higher level of anxiety in the background going, somebody's going to find me out. Somebody's going to find out that I've been false. And what did I say? How did I show up to him? And what happens when he and this other person are in the room and they're different and you showed up differently to both of them and you go, oh, gosh, which one do I present? Because I presented this to him and that to him. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work to maintain all that kind of juggling of a persona. You know, so on one level, it's simply energetically more efficient to just show up as you. It's a lot less stressful, even though it may appear to be stressful at first. It's a lot less stressful simply because it takes less out of you. You never have to go, okay, who was I the last time? It's one of the reasons why when I talked to my son early on in our relationship, I mentioned we had a conversation about honesty. I said, honesty isn't about a moral principle or being a good or a bad human being. It's just simply easier. On that level alone, it's just easier. Because I'm not dragging around the, when am I going to be found out, energy. And constantly having to sustain the web, the image. It's just easier. So, Margie, what's happening over there?
You know, it's interesting listening to particularly something that Molly just said, that I've been sitting with that question because I listened to the recording on Friday and been trying to think of, you know, who I am or exactly, I can't remember the way the question's asked. And it dawned on me that in a couple conversations that I'd had with people this week who were interested in my coaching, that I did just that. I said, you know, here's who I am and here's what I do. And, you know, I didn't say take it or leave it, but pretty much it's like, you know, if this sounds like it works for you, great. And if not, that's great too. So that's what just as I was thinking about the answers to that last week's question at the very end, I didn't have an answer until I listened to all of this, and particularly what Molly had just said, that the answer just appeared to me. So, yeah, that's cool. My answer.
Great. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, and you can tell where you are in the continuum of being yourself and being and loving it with the kind of energy that one has. And I'll probably see if I can put this together into a document at some point. Because early on in the continuum, one is, I'll be anybody you need me to be. You know, and even earlier is probably, I'm nobody. And then there's, I'll be anybody you need me to be. And then there's gets to be a kind of aggression about it. I'm me, damn it. You know, if you don't like it, shove it. You know, and then there's a kind of like, I'm me, take it or leave it. And then there's another one that says, you know, I'm me. And if we don't fit, you know, say you're talking to a client, how can I help you find the one who does fit? Because in that moment, we've shifted from in any energy at all having to defend who we are as okay, because we don't have to. We don't have to defend that we're okay being who we are when we're genuinely okay being who we are. So if we subtract, if there's any energy on it, if we subtract the energy, now what we can do is be still loving, caring, and compassionate, and recognize that not all shoes fit me. And we just go, okay, I'm a rose. And I'm a sterling silver rose, for those of you who know roses. I'm a sterling silver rose. And that's who I am. And if you don't want a sterling silver rose, that's great, I can help you find whatever other flower you want. Let me do that. But I'm not going to sit here and be a sterling silver rose and go, geez, I really wish I was a sunflower. Because I don't. I don't wish I was a sunflower for a second. I love being a sterling silver rose. So I just offer that, and I think I'll probably have a kind of continuum scale and maybe even some sort of assessment with questions like, when people don't accept me for who I am, I get angry. That just lets you know where you are on the continuum, which means the reflection is, when I get angry that people don't accept me for who I am, somewhere along the line, they're still reflecting me, not accepting me for who I am. And that's the button they have pushed on us. That's the doorbell they rang in our house. It starts to become a non-issue. When it's a non-issue for them, when it's a non-issue for me. Now we can get to the spot where we go, oh yeah, this is me, and you don't get me. That's okay. I get that. So what can I do for you?
That what I can do for you brings them back to you. I really feel that.
Well, yes, it does. And at the same time, it also honors that they are different and seeking something different, which means you're honoring them for being themselves.
Yes.
So not only are you honoring you, you're honoring them in the process. And whether they say it's a client or a potential client, whether they opt to work with you or not, they will remember that your intention was to serve them being themselves and being true to themselves. Which is why when people say, you know, it's not a fit for me, I go, that's great. Is there any way that I can help you find the fit? Because I know a number of people in the profession.
You mean somebody's actually said that to you?
Oh yeah, there have been some people who've been directed to me by friends who have enjoyed the work that we do together, and yet, you know, so they think I should come, that person should come to me because they think that because they fit with me that the other person should as well. Which means the person who fit with me in the first place doesn't really get who the other person is yet. So they send them to me, and all I'm going to do is get clarity. Are we a good fit? If not, I want to find the best fit for you that I can, because that does a number of things. It honors your uniqueness. It honors that person's uniqueness. And on top of it, it also supports the whole premise of coaching, which is that it is about chemistry and people having the best fit for their lives. So it supports the profession. You know, if I help a match be made between a client and another coach who's a much better fit than I am for either topic or methodology process, that just supports the profession. I mean, there are millions of people in the world. How many of them do I need in my business?
You know, what I keep being struck with is I know this is about coaching and it's also about living. So it's about friendships, relationships, collaborators, and work. I mean, it's about all relationships that I'm in.
Absolutely, because while this looks like it's simply and only about coaching, it isn't. This is just the entry point into the hologram called you, wherein each part of you touches every other part of you. So it does affect all of one's life. Business partners, friends, community, even opportunities, events to attend, all that sort of stuff. It's the same kind of conversation. Cool. So let's see where we're going today. Yeehaw. So these are the six agilities out of nine. There are six of them that are more associated with evoking than the full nine. Presence, which is source. Sensing acuity, which is related to quantum entanglement, meaning we're not all that separate. It looks like it is, but we're not. Saying what is, which is really about presencing what is calling to be heard. Provocative inquiry, which is about what is calling to be asked. Illuminating awareness, which is about what is already present. And aligning with appropriate action, which is about what is there to do. This is what it looks like in a six version. Presence is always in the center, whether it's nine or six. Now, I put this together in particular because presence is the source of all of those. Presence is the place where it all happens. But much like the old phone dials, really doesn't matter in a moment which one comes first. They all play together. They're all connected and inextricably linked with each other. So, you know, when one is present, they're all present. It's just a question of which door or which finger, which hole do you put your finger in first? What's the number that's being dialed? So here are some key definitions. And I picked agilities because I actually like the word. It kind of appeared to me is really what happened. And it was the power of moving quickly and easily, nimbleness. And acuity is the sharpness. And I especially love this aspect of the definition of it, which is a keenness of sense perception, meaning it goes just beyond listening. It's almost like you can tangibly feel. You can almost get the smell of, the taste of. And beyond the gross senses, the inner senses. What I mean by the inner senses is this. We have the gross senses, which is the five senses that we walk around the planet with, that the body walks around the planet with. But we also have these other senses. And I'm not just talking about extrasensory perception. I'm talking about deeper levels of what we call listening. And here's an example. When you listen to music in your head, you know, like say you wake up, I'm sure everybody has this experience, you wake up and there's a song playing in your head, or you go to sleep and you can't get this song out of your head, right?
Yeah.
Where is it playing? It's not playing externally. If the music is off and you're still hearing the music, where is it playing?
In
your
mind.
What are you hearing? Yeah, well, yes, but inside you, in the presence of you.
Yes.
So you're hearing, you're even hearing inside you melody. Right?
Right. Very much.
Because you could sing it out loud. So the melody is living inside you, inside the universe of you, which means there's something else there that's going on. It's not just ears. When you visualize something, what are you using? Looks like your eyes, but you're really not. When you are, quote unquote, seeing it in your mind, there's a different sense of it. So acuity is about keenness of sense perception, both the gross senses, the external ones, and the internal ones. And a frictor is simply a factor of friction that impedes, impairs, or inhibits the natural presence of what is already built in. That's related to the respectful assumptions. So the tools that we have for subtraction, and it is really about subtraction. I think it's probably one of the most potent energies that we can have for a number of reasons. Number one, when you try to add something over top of something that's already there. I was at a lunch after a workshop this morning that I was leading, and one of the people says, yeah, I have a phrase for that. What happens, it's like smearing peanut butter all over everything. Yeah, you get the flavor of peanut butter, but there's all this other stuff underneath. When we try to add over top of stuff, it's got to interact with it. It may conflict with it, et cetera. It's simpler to subtract. If you wanted to touch your arm, it's simpler to take off the parka, take off the jacket, take off the sweater, take off the shirt, than it is to add more pressure on the outside of the parka in an attempt to feel closer to your arm. And we use these tools, the gap experience, weight approach, the C technique, the core technique, and Sanyama, which is an extension of the gap. So I want to go into these agilities briefly, and then we'll come back and visit those tools. Here's some of the descriptors for the experience of presence. It's less of a definition than it is an attempt at trying to describe it. Unhookable. Ultimately, optimal presence is unhookable. Living from ease and grace. And we are all in a percentage of hookability contingent on the arena. Meaning, are we hookable around this topic? Are we hookable around that topic? Are we hookable around this emotion? Are we hookable around that emotion? You may have mastery of being unhookable in one area, but much like the old amplifiers for music, you know, one of the dials is up, but the other four are still down on two. So you're not getting the full sound of it. Presence is also intuitively knowing what, when, how, where, and if. Whether that's about conversation, language, action, doesn't matter. And the reason why it's about intuitively knowing is that that's our natural state of knowingness. My definition of intuition is knowing the truth of something without benefit of vicarious experience, meaning someone else is telling us, or evidence, meaning something that somebody has, that we have proven to ourselves. And an example of that is, if you had never seen a chair before and you walked into a room and there was a chair, you would sit in. You would know to sit in it. That's natural knowing because you're not disconnected from it. In terms of quantum entanglement, you're already connected with it. By the same way that every one of you on this call has walked into a room at some point in time in your life, and you know whether or not two or three people in that room, regardless of whether or not anything is there and showing you, you'll know whether or not there was an argument in the room. You'll feel the energy. Even if it seems like it's been resolved at this moment in time, you'll feel that there was an argument in there. You've walked into stores and gone, whoa, this is not for me. And it's not just because of what you see. You think it's what you see, but it's actually you sensing. You have the presence to go, wow. And presence is the ability to spontaneously respond, not react, but respond to the needs of the moment, not the future or the past, with the fullness of one's being. Any questions on presence before we play with sensing acuity? Because they lead into each other in conversation, but they don't have to. Presence is also a function of doing sufficient amount of subtraction of the not self so that we can augment and more regularly sustain our experience of the presence that's already there. So we'll heighten it and increase the frequency of that experience. It's not that we're not going to go away and be not present. We are going to go away at times. The question is, how quickly are we going to come back? Meaning, what does it take for us to come back? And how many fewer instances of going away can we have? And we can't keep ourselves present by will. can't make yourself be present. Because by having the thought in our head that keeps saying, I have to be present, I have to be present, I have to be present, what am I focusing on?
Not being present, just on the presence of being present.
Yes. Yes. I'm really working on the thought of being present here.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, sensing acuity is that sense of being connected with everything so that natural knowing makes itself known, meaning it shows up inside us. It is a keenness of sense perception, including the subtle senses that I was just talking about inside us, that have a sense of what's really going on. And on top of it, and this is the cool piece of it, on top of it, it's timeless, meaning it's not limited to present time. Or what we call present time, because present time is actually the it's the coalescence of past, present, and future in a simultaneous experience of all of it. Because they all exist. Question is, what's our experience of them? Now, because we live from the gross senses, touch, taste, smell, feel, all that sort of stuff, we have the arrow of time that looks like it's moving forward in a progression. But the mathematics of quantum physics tells us that all time simultaneously exists. The only question is, can we experience it that way? When we do, sometimes we have this experience of remembering the future. Meaning we have a sense that a window has been opened into the future, not of a, what it is that we want to have happen in a Shakti Gawain visualizing method, but we have the sense and experience of it that it has actually already happened in a particular reality and we're stepping toward it. It's already happened. And we're just now understanding part of the process and the steps that had it show up. That's a fun way to play. Saying what is, again, works from the speaker who's saying it, having no attachment to whether or not the person likes them, whether or not they're going to be upset, whether or not this is the, you know, whether or not you're going to keep them as a client, that kind of stuff, whatever it is. Having no attachment to the person believing them, going their way, etc. You simply say what is and then see what happens. Mostly, it's going to be born out of the sensing acuity and presence, but it's not a linear experience. Saying what is has fearless, clean, optimal, and in-the-moment statements. And they occur naturally when the speaker is free from any need to maintain, protect, or present any image in any way, shape, or form. So, for example, if I have this image, wow, I'm a Master Certified Coach, MCC. The ICF gives me an MCC. And I've had it since 1997. That must make me brilliant. Now, what happens in a session when I get lost? Which can happen. What happens in a session if I have an attachment to that identity, to that image, and I get lost in a session? What's going to happen? Just some imaginings.
You're going to stop being in the moment and saying what is and start getting into your head, which will make you less of an effective coach.
Yes. All my creativity and intelligence will be desperately scrambling for how to protect and maintain that image. And I will absolutely not be in the present. And I will have taken myself out of service to the client because it is now about me and not about them. When it is simply easier, going back to the honesty equation, simply easier to just say, you know what? I'm lost right now. I have no idea how to coach you. I'm completely befuddled. So what do you think that does in the relationship when you have that level of honesty?
Builds more trust because it creates that truth and it makes you human.
Yes. And what else?
There's a trust, and it gives the other person permission to also have no idea what's going on and feel okay about it.
Yes. Was that Molly? I heard you say
Yeah, I think it brings the client closer, and their awareness. You're acknowledging your truth. And when someone is listening to that, it's like, wow, you know, it's, I think the trust becomes even tighter, stronger because of that honesty.
Yes. And it does, you know, it does take the edge off having to be perfect in the world, which is a great reliever for people, especially when they have given you a level of authority in the relationship. Regardless of the language of co-creation, nevertheless, they give you a certain level of authority because they're opening themselves to your counsel, to your co-creation, whatever it is, but to your input, even if the input is a question. You know, you have modeled that it's okay to not know. As was said, and that's huge for people because we don't get endorsed for that. In fact, we usually get crapped on more than a statue in Central Park. Next, agility, provocative inquiry, is surfacing what needs to be known and even what's calling to be known. You know, the client presents themselves to you, and they are, in a sense, invoking and calling the coaching through you. It is, you know, in some ways like the Oracle at Delphi. You know, there they are going, what are the gods, what's the God's message to me to help me move forward in my life? And we are the sort of messenger, the relay station for what is being called, so that what it can surface what needs to be known that for some or whatever reason is not at this moment in time known. And that may be that the person is much more competent than they're giving themselves credit for. It may not be something they're hiding from. Well, they might even be hiding from that. It is also about asking the question of most depth as required by the moment. Sometimes a shallow question is what's needed. It's not always about asking the deepest question. It is about asking the question of most depth as required by the moment. In the ICF and in you know, a lot of classes, there's this notion of the powerful question, which really the language of that, of what's describing that, can really throw people off because it's got to be powerful or it's not useful or I'm not fulfilling the competency. A provocative inquiry might be, you hear the situation and it might be just something as simple as, what do you want to do about that? It doesn't necessarily always have to take somebody to some sort of evolved state in that moment, because that question may set them up for the next question, which does take them to that state.
Or like we
so
were
the moment,
pulling
yes, go ahead.
from the parka down to the, you know, to the shirt, to the undershirt, you know, it's that going in that, what at the pace and what works for that client in that given moment.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's to have all the clothes come off at once, and sometimes it's to take off the parka first. We can't decide for them. We can attune to the moment that says, go for it all, or we can tune to the moment that says, take off parka and jacket. Okay, good. Got it. It's also being unafraid of consequences that may be provoked, such as emotional reactions. A lot of our fear of being able to call forth people or provoke people is related to our own ability, and this is why we do the work on ourselves to subtract these. It's related to our own ability to be in the presence of strong emotions without being hooked, without feeling like we have to run away, shut it down, or without feeling like we have to overcomfort people. You know, there, it'll be all right. Well, actually, no, in the moment, it's not all right. That's why I'm upset. That allows you to be with what is. And if they're happy, that's great. If they're more successful than you, that's great. If they're sad, if they're angry, that's great, because if that's what's there, then that's what's there. If they're feeling despairing, that's great. It's whatever is there. But if being around those emotions and strong expression of them makes us a little crazy because we haven't handled some of that on our own, ourselves, and we feel like we have to, like, do something to manage it, we can't begin to provoke to the level that will really serve people. Illuminating awareness. And the first one of this one is, this is really the key. Subtracting that which obscures awareness. Being mindful of the second bullet, which is cognizant that awareness is always present, although it's often hidden by factors of friction. It's already there, waiting. Awareness is the natural state. And then there's a whole bunch of crap that gets in between us and experiencing it. Otherwise, what we're trying to do is make awareness be where it isn't. No, it's already there. Awareness has a number of levels, though. Awareness of what fits the moment with respect to action or waiting or speaking or decisions or reflection or even which agility or technique to engage with. Again, you can see how this comes out of presence, because the presence informs the moment. And here we have aligning with appropriate action. And this is born of the law of least effort. It's not about that there is no effort. And there is nothing wrong with the path of least resistance. If I'm in a jungle, I do not, just for the sake of building character or fulfilling some other person's notion that hard work will make it feel more valuable at the end, want to hack my way through the trees and the lianas and anything else that might be in the way just so that I can feel like it was valuable when there's a path through the jungle already. Law of least effort indicates there is an effort that is appropriate to the action that is, or the state that is being encountered. Bill Gates made a statement. He says, I want to hire the lazy person. Person who's called lazy. He says, because that's the person who's going to try and find the easiest way to get that job done. All I have to do is maintain the quality level. To me, that's smart. Every innovation that has come across the planet has come out of someone wanting to find an easier way. You know, this whole thing of getting across the country on a wagon pulled by horses, there's got to be a better way. Railroad. Okay, let's go there. Yeah, railroad's pretty good, but, look, airplane. Let's go there. And I'm sure that somewhere somebody's working on teleportation. Now, that doesn't mean to say that somebody might not want to walk across the country for the experience of it. That's completely different. But to say that walking across the country is validated by the effort of it versus taking a car is a completely different approach. It's not. It's not validated by that. It's only validated because that may be somebody's experience that they want to have. It doesn't make it better than taking a car. Aligning with appropriate action is in harmony with the sensing of the emerging future, meaning there's a future coming toward us right now. There are things in motion already. It's not a static. See, this is the thing. There's an illusion out there that we are creating the future. It's on its way. It's already coming to meet us. So we can either align with it. You know, there are people who are busy fighting the fact of cell phones. They're busy fighting the fact of the internet. The future is already on its way, whether we like it or not. So the question is, what's our natural alignment with that which is coming toward us? Which means being attuned to the moment, the situation, and the resources that are apparent, available, and necessary for that alignment. And the essence of the agilities is, without being, doing is pointless. So, any questions? Or anything that's kind of rolling around as you get a sense of a beginning sense of the fullness of the agilities? Now, I'm mindful that I have an entire course that's just on the 9 agilities themselves and subtracting everything that you can possibly, that I can think of to subtract that would keep you from presencing and experiencing those agilities on a regular and daily basis. However, this is a part of being able to masterfully evoke people, and we're going to do what we can to subtract things in the interim. So, any questions here at this juncture?
So it just feels like there's a lot. So it's almost like being able to take it in and kind of be with all of these. So that's where I am. It's like, whoa, this sounds great. And I'm not sure. It makes sense, and there's some being with it that's important for me.
Yes. Well, without being, doing is pointless.
I heard that somewhere.
I don't know where that could have been. And yes, it's not expected that you go, yeah, jump on board, let's go. I fully expect that in each of your own ways that you will integrate with whatever it is that feels appropriate for you to integrate with it. Cool. So, this is part of the experiment. Go into the lab this week. This is a subtracting experiment. And have your awareness. This is the tuning fork. You know, you're tuning it to yourself. But have the awareness call forth whatever frictors within you are present with respect to the agilities and what was talked about around what part of what makes each of these agilities up. Let them make themselves known, these frictors, and collect them so that we can subtract them. And if you want to start to go to town on subtracting them already, do that. And if you want to play with buddies, let me know. We have someone in Texas, Washington, Arizona, and Philadelphia. My guess is that it would probably be Arizona and Washington time zones easier and Texas and Philadelphia. Does that seem like a good pairing?
Yeah. Probably. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I will put you all in touch with each other. And then you can practice. Or you can even sit with the inquiry of, okay, so this saying what is thing. I get this. I got the PDF of it. I'm looking at it. Let's go this. So what keeps me from being fully expressive of this? And at the very least, build a list. So we can start to knock them off. Start to take off the parka and the jacket. Is there anyone on the call that the buddy piece here doesn't work for? You can send me an email if that's true, okay? Because I don't want to force the buddy system on people if you don't want to play that way. That wouldn't fit, would it?
So I'm open to the buddy system, and I'm not quite sure what it is we're doing with each other in this buddy system.
Okay,
yeah.
In the buddy system, the first part of this is going to help is use each other to help each other build the list.
Okay.
You know, so you ask each other, you know, around this particular agility, what are the challenges that you face?
Okay.
And you know how to ask each other questions, and you know how to, you know, draw things out. It's not so that you do anything about them at that juncture.
Mm-hmm.
It is just so that you can build the list and say, this is where we're going to town. And then you'll be using the pure awareness techniques to address these at a point in the future with your buddies.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, that sounds great.
Cool. Because what we're after here is this distillation. Oh, the greatness. It even sounds fun to say it that way. But,
mm-hmm.
Oh, the greatness.
Well, I thought it was a perfume.
There's a bottle with that. So you got the picture of it, even though you don't have it. There's a bottle with a perfume in it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, the greatness.
Uh-huh.
And this one is remember, and the word is spelled always, ALLWAYS. It's both meanings of that. Remember, always, in always and always,
uh-huh.
The client is more than they regularly experience.
Mm.
Michael, the slides
yes.
are not moving when you're talking about them.
Hmm. Has it moved now?
Well, the whole night. Even last week, it was the same way.
You
were there
slow?
Much faster than it was like a minute or a half a minute before we got it.
Hmm.
You were
okay,
already on
that.
The
Molly,
slide.
Molly, make sure that you have the most current Adobe Flash.
I do.
Huh.
Is everybody experiencing that, or is it relatively quick?
No, mine's been fine.
Mine's
okay.
Better this week. Last week, though, mine was a little slow.
Okay.
I'll look into it then. Maybe it is something here. I don't know what, but
yeah,
I'll check it.
And I will also look into it here to see if there's something that is set up in it.
Okay.
Thanks for that input. So yeah, okay. The client is more than they regularly experience. We are the stuff of stars. They have noticed that we, you know, that our existence, that the planet, that our, the being of us, even the neutrinos that pass through us, are part of the creation of us. We are miraculous. And we live as mundane. So the game is to help people regularly experience their greatness, even if their greatness is quiet. Because it's not about everybody being some sort of famous celebrity, that is about them being great. But each person, because of our culture and because of the messages that have come down over time, has been diminished in terms of the expression of what they're capable of. And part of the reason for that is that they don't experience themselves. This is that disconnect we're talking about. They're disconnected from the experience of their greatness in all ways. So that's what we're after with Masterful Evoking. We want to keep calling that forth. We want to hold that, yes, there is greatness in you, and let's see what has to be subtracted for it to be revealed. Let's see what has to happen in order for that bloom to open up and show the brightness of its colors unapologetically, without comparing itself to whether or not, oh, geez, I wish I was a sunflower. No, it just goes, yeah, I'm a this, I'm a dandelion. Great, you're a dandelion. How wonderful. So, I want to do two things. What I want to do is find out first from each of you, relatively quickly, what pinged you. You know how when a computer gets pinged by another computer, you know, something is pinged in there, it recognizes the other computer. What got pinged in you today? And you can go in any order. What got pinged in your being today?
I'll start. For me, there's a parallel here. And what keeps coming to my mind is, the ping is that the agilities are a much higher place of awareness. But the competencies are parallel with the agilities in some form. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we're taking the competencies to a higher level.
Yes, there's an evolutionary aspect to them.
Yes,
to the agilities.
Right.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
And so, and we're taking the ones that really matter, as far as we are concerned, because it's really our personal who that we bring to the coaching session, that we
yes.
can be engaged, be fully present. So we're cleaning up by getting rid of the frictors. And being able to work these agilities the way, in the evolutionary way that will be beneficial. I mean, that's
yes.
That's how I see it.
Yes.
I don't know if I make sense.
That makes a lot of sense, because the agilities are presenced more than they are learned.
They are. They're the being.
Yep.
And I just wanted to say that when I first started, I felt that I had to get you to trust me, and then after that I had to acknowledge you. And then I had to be present with you. I had to listen. I had to be curious. I had to ask the right questions. And maybe I had to challenge you. And then you better be accountable to me and have actions and goals. And then I took a deep breath and I collapsed and I went to the next class. And that's how I learned how to be a coach.
And that was the earlier iteration.
And then about a year ago, you disturbed all of that.
That's my job.
And here I am.
Yes.
And I learned it in that order, like from 1 to 11.
Yes.
I had to do it that way, 1 to 11.
Yep. Yes. And that was an earlier part that was part of the evolution. You know, when you think about evolution, you know, before the fish had to come out of the water. Right? Walk around the land for a while before it could start to run on stuff.
I was just blowing bubbles. I wasn't even out of the water.
Cool. Who else? What got pinged?
Okay. What I've realized, and I think it's sort of a combination of what we're starting on with this, built on the masterful provocation, is I'm now becoming more aware of what I'm subtracting or when I'm subtracting, like, bits of myself when I'm working with a client. And, you know, what I used to find is when I would work with certain clients who might in the past intimidate me or challenge the way I had started, you know, our conversation or whatever, I would start to feel like I would start getting into my own stuff. And, oh my gosh, you know, that whole internal language that we have. And
yeah.
What I've noticed in the last few weeks particularly, and the way I've noticed is because I've had some of those types of clients who have challenged me that way, that I'm able to just, in a sense, I think of it in a visual sense, of just backing up.
Mm.
And actually, even as I say that, I think of two things. Number one, I back up and, you know, remove myself from having to have any answers, number one. But even as I say that, number two, particularly if it's somebody that it's the first time we've worked together, I might actually even challenge where before I've never challenged a client and, you know, in their resistance about something. But I've realized that at that moment it felt like that's what I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's sort of a whole combination there.
Yes. So the moment is beginning to dictate your coaching versus the agenda or the mind or the scenario or the situation or et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the moment does.
Yeah. Makes it a whole lot easier.
Well, yeah. And so all we do then is we enhance our ability to be attuned to what the moment is calling for. And the way we do that is we subtract the stuff.
Yeah.
Anything that keeps us from feeling the moment in as fully as it is being called to be felt. Next ping.
Well, this is BJ, and the one that I'm really pinging with is presence. not too surprisingly. And because I've been being with this spontaneously responding to the needs of the moment with the fullness of my being. And what a difference that makes. And I actually did this work with a client yesterday who's been kind of stuck. So it's like, hey, let's try this. And I tried it last week. It didn't work very well. And it was okay. It was like, okay. I mean, so being able to come back, I didn't have it mean anything about me or, oh, I'll never be able to do this. Or and I did it with her yesterday, and some shifts really happened. And it was her seeing, like, her body knew what to do in doing this work. So that was very exciting. So the presence piece and the saying what is, those two are really, like, working together for me right now. So those are the two that really, like, stand out. I kind of feel highlighted for me in the moment.
Cool.
And for me, I would say it's the clarity piece and for the component of knowing that the subtraction of the frictors that I personally have in my own life will allow me to be greater at subtracting the frictors from my clients' lives.
Very simply elegant about that, yeah. And with the frictors being gone in ours,
right,
it is so much easier for us to see the frictors in theirs. And then to affect and help them subtract the frictors, not from a what I'm supposed to do when, but from what's being called to be done now.
Right. Because that connection
big difference.
Is
yeah.
More fully present.
Absolutely.
You know what you said too, what hit me, and this is what, so I help train coaches too, and what I talk to them about is that when they practice some of these things in their, not just with clients, but in the rest of their lives, it makes it easier in coaching. And so that's what just hit me now. It's like doing these things in other areas of our, in all areas of our life, helps to do it in coaching and vice versa. So they work together. So that's, you know, being present in all areas or being, you know, saying what is in all areas really helps have it be natural in coaching or more natural.
Cool.
More fluid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, yeah.
So, here's the thing. And if you just have a couple more minutes, I'm going to do an experience of Sanyama, S-A-N-Y-A-M-A, which is an extended experience of the gap. And this is going to start you on your path this week. And I just ask that you don't need to share what it is that comes to you. But just hold or collect it or whatever it is. So I'm going to ask everybody to just simply close your eyes. We'll start with the gap exercise, but it leads into it. Notice that when you close your eyes, a couple of things happen. The sense of sound becomes a little bit more acute. It's easier to hear my voice. It's easier to hear things in your background. There's nothing to do about that. It's just that that's what happens when we take sight offline. As a sense. Notice also that you may be a little bit more sensitized to the sense of touch, whether you're aware of how your body is sitting on a chair, or you're the sense of temperature, or if there's a breeze where you are, just a little bit more. And again, that's just a function of what happens when we take the sense of sight offline. We take one, the others get a little bit more heightened. It's a natural experience, a natural phenomenon. Also notice that you have thoughts that occur. And the thoughts show themselves almost as if they are separate from everything, in the same way that the crest of a wave on the ocean, the white cap, looks like it's separate from the ocean, that white cap, but actually it's still part of the ocean. And it rises and shows itself, and then it goes back down into the deep silence of the full ocean. And notice that your thoughts arise out of silence, and then they disappear back down into a background of silence. I'll just give you a few seconds to just notice some thoughts. And now, if you allow yourself, you can start to shift the focus in the same way that you shift the depth of field of a camera to take what's in the foreground and bring the background a little bit more accentuated. And the foreground gets a little fuzzy. In the same way, if you allow yourself, you can bring that background of silence into a sharper focus. And the thoughts get a little fuzzier. They'll still be there, but they won't have the same power in the moment. And just allow yourselves to notice that background of silence. And now into that pool of silence, I'm going to ask you to drop this question. Of the six agilities, presence, sensing acuity, saying what is, provocative inquiry, illuminating awareness, aligning with appropriate action, which is the one that is most optimal for me to focus on first? And whatever comes to you is what comes to you, regardless of what kind of sense it may or may not make. Okay. And if nothing came to you, then in this moment in time, that information isn't available. And there wasn't anything there that is clear at this moment in time, and it will make itself known. So, you can open your eyes. And if there's anything anyone wants to say to complete today for you, the floor is yours.
This stuff is fun.
Cool, thank you.
This is DJ. So, well, I'd like to know each person. I don't know you yet, so I would appreciate if you say who you are first. So I'm trying to put names and voices together still. So,
okay, sorry, BJ.
That's okay. I'm saying what is.
Cool.
This is Lenana in Texas.
I guess I should say this is Margie in Arizona.
And this is Molly. I'm in Philadelphia. And I love this class. And I really do from my heart. I just think it's wonderful to listen to everyone that shares, because I learn from you, and that's why I'm here. And on that note, I will say good night.
Okay. Anything else, anyone else who needs to say to close, or are we complete?
This is great. I'm loving it. So thank you.
Yes.
You're welcome. Cool. We'll catch you actually in 2 weeks.
Right.
Because next week I'm out of town. So that gives you 2 weeks. I will set you up with partners unless I hear from you differently. And then I will post the recordings by midday tomorrow so that you can access the recording and the PowerPoint.
Great.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay. You're welcome. Okay. Thank you all for participating. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.